I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome to Spark My Muse, everyone. I am very happy to welcome Rachel Tolson on the program today. Thank you so much, Rachel, for taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, sure. I'm very pleased to be here.
And so you're a woman of many talents, and I'm excited to dig into them. Would you mind introducing yourself and telling us some of your greatest passions lately?
Yeah. Well, so probably the biggest thing about me is that I am a mom of six boys. And so a lot of my life is kind of wrapped around raising children. But I'm very, very passionate about writing. I've always wanted to be a writer. And so I actually lost my job in January of 2015, which was, it was 2 days after my sixth son was born. And my husband and I decided that we were just going to go for it. And I was just going to be a writer. So that's basically what I've been doing now, is raising children and writing. And that same year, we started a podcast for some intentional parenting types of things.
Yeah. And maybe we could actually talk a little bit about the podcast first. Uh-huh. And you in the boat with Ben. Uh-huh, right?
Yeah. Yeah. My name isn't anywhere in me or in that. So we've joked about that being a silly thing. But but it's kind of the idea behind it is that my husband is a very creative person as well. So he does a lot of art and design, and he's a video marketing guy. And so the idea behind the podcast is that as creative people, we have a little bit of a hard time when we have families actually having time to pursue those creative things. He and I both really enjoy music, and we used to have a band together. And when kids came along, that became a little bit more difficult to do because we couldn't go play places and that kind of thing. And so our main goal behind that podcast, there are two main goals. Number one is to encourage people that the dreams that they have in their hearts, the dreams for creativity, are still possible when we have children. They don't just go away. And we need to be able to work toward those things because they're fulfilling for us and they make us better parents. And the second goal behind that podcast is just to provide people with tools for pursuing those dreams and also for parenting their kids in an intentional way. So, you know, intentional is kind of one of those buzzwords, but we really try to parent from values and making sure that we provide a framework for our children so that they can make their own decisions about who they want to be and that kind of thing. And so I read so many parenting books because I'm one of those people who I do a lot of research to be the best that I can be at anything that I put my hand to. And so, so I tend to read a lot of parenting books. We share a lot of the resources that we have and those sorts of things. And so it's something we're both very passionate about.
And it's such a good point that your children see, just because you're parents, you don't put everything on hold creatively, that you teach them, this is who we are, and you are invited to be a part of this creative life that we're living out as parents, not just, oh, guess what, our lives are on hold now that we're parents and we're not people anymore.
And it's not easy, you know, because parenting is an all-consuming job. And so helping each other, providing support for each other is, I feel like it's just so important as parents. My husband and I were just talking about how when we have kids, we kind of go into hiding, you know, because we're so entrenched in the raising of them. And so providing a podcast for these people, also for other parents, also helps them feel less alone, which is, you know, that's another one of our goals, is that we want to make sure that people realize, you know, you're not alone in how difficult this is to do, because it really is difficult. And it's so easy to just take the easy way out and say, you know what, I'm just going to give up on my dream for a little bit and wait until the kids are older. But that's really, you know, that doesn't really serve our children either.
Exactly. And so what's the age range of your children right now?
My oldest is 9. And then the youngest, he just turned 1.
Oh, that is, you're in boot camp, right?
Yeah, it's like it's six boys within 8 years is what we tell people. So it's pretty crazy. We have a very crazy household. One of those in there are twins. So the twins are three and they're pretty crazy right now, too. So so we kind of know what we're talking about when we when we talk about these things, because it really is crazy. And trying to pursue creative things in the middle of family life, it's kind of a balancing act. And we have to, I feel like it's really good for us to teach our children what that looks like.
Mm. And speaking of really creative things, I'm kind of excited for you to talk a little bit about Farindale and what that is and kind of introduce it to my listeners.
Yeah. Well, Farindale is a series that I'm really, really excited about. I got the idea because one of our philosophies, one of our parenting philosophies that we teach our children is that people are doing the best they can with what they have. And that kind of permeates everything that we do. So if somebody wrongs us, we try our best to think, you know what, they're just doing the best they can with what they have. And so this idea kind of grew into this this creative novel idea. And it's taking fairy tales. You know, we've heard fairy tales all our lives, but we hear about the heroes. We don't really hear about the villains in those. And so I got this idea to redo some fairy tales and tell it from a villain perspective. That not really, I mean, it doesn't justify what they've done, but it kind of gives a little bit of background on who they are and what sort of made them make the choice that they did, you know? And so my goal behind that is to help kids remember that the people who do bad things to them, that's not really who they are. It's something that they have chosen to do, but they can choose to be better also. You know, our bad decisions don't make us bad. And that's one of the things that we teach our children too, because I feel like it's really important. And so Farindale is a story about a king who, his son is born without magic, and the only way that he can keep the throne is if he has a son with magic. And then he finds out there's a boy in his village who has magic. And so he decides he's going to kidnap this boy and make sure that he never can steal the throne. And so it's told from a villain perspective. And then all of the children become the different villains in different fairy tales. So it branches out from there. But it's this huge, I mean, this thing is going to take me like 5 years to write probably. Oh. Because it's very involved. Yeah.
Wow. And then you've kind of tested it out on your own children to see
their reception. Yeah, we're actually reading. It's weird because it's written sort of like what you'd see Netflix series, you know, where they have episodes and then there's a whole season of episodes and then there's a season two of episodes. That's kind of how Farindale is written. And so right now my kids and I are reading episode two of season one. So and they're enthralled because fairy tales are one of those things that, you know, magic and kingdoms and all of that. That's really exciting stuff for kids. So, and this is written for 9 to 12 year olds, but we tend to read a lot to our kids, and so they're all just, you know, enamored with the story. So
they can handle the age range of it because they're so used to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, one of the things I noticed about you was that you have a wide breadth. You've done journalism. You have hit a bunch of different genres, and maybe you can talk about what led you into fiction, and like, how did you know this is something I want to pursue over other things? And maybe you can talk about some of the different skill sets you've developed along the way.
Yeah. Well, I grew up writing stories. When I was like 5 years old, I remember my mom stapling computer paper together and just giving me a little booklet so that I could write. I was obsessed with Laura Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie. And so a lot of my early stories contain the characters Laura, Mary, and Carrie, and getting into different adventures and things like that. So I've always known that I wanted to write fiction. But when I went to college, you know, I had planned on getting an English degree. And then, you know, a well-meaning advisor just said, you know, you might want to do something that has a little bit more money in it. Not that journalism has money in it, but at least you would be able to pay bills because you could work for a newspaper and all of that. And I was really interested in journalism. I love telling the stories of people. I love meeting new people. And so that's what I did. I worked in journalism for about 10 years, did a lot of feature stuff. So profiles on people, which was my favorite thing to do. And I think one of the things that that taught me is not only working within deadlines, but also being an observer of human nature. And that has been especially helpful in fiction writing because, you know, you're not just creating people who nobody can relate to, but you have to use, I mean, I have so many people I remember interviewing as a journalist who I use as characters, you know, not specifically as characters, but some of their character traits I remember that stuck out to me, I'll put into a character, you know, those little quirks that make people people. And so I feel like, you know, a lot of people ask me, do you regret that you spent 10 years in journalism? And my answer is absolutely not, because not only did I meet fascinating people, but I feel like it honed my writing skills. You know, we've all read those books that are just rambling and sprawling and you're like, man, he really needed an editor, you know? But I also spent a lot of time being an editor. And so I know how to choose words and how to cut them out, you know, if they're unnecessary. And so I feel like that's really given me a good perspective on story writing. So, but I really do, I enjoy nonfiction. I do a lot of memoir type writing, where it's just sort of examining my life. And, I try really hard to be very transparent about some of the things that either I've gone through or that I'm going through now, so that because I feel like the way that we can heal people is to be transparent, to open up our lives and to let people see a window in, you know, because we get really, really good at pretending like everything is okay and that we're perfect and that we have everything together. And let me just tell you, as the mom of six kids, I do not have everything together. And there are days that I, you know, I fail so massively. And I don't ever want people, there are always people who are just like, I don't know how you do what you do. And I'm like, man, you should just come over to my house and see that I do not do everything. Because it's impossible, you know? And so that's kind of what I want to do. And I started, I don't know if you had seen my humor blog, which is Crash Test Parents. I started that because I felt so overwhelmed with the parenting side of things that I felt like I needed to introduce humor into my days. And so that it's kind of my lifeline, you know, like when something terrible or something stressful happens, I try to spin it into a humorous tale for my readers. So that's one of the things I really enjoy also.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's not as interesting when everything is perfect and people wonder, could it really be like that? You know, it's a lot more vulnerable, but it's also more human to know they're just like everybody else. They're just like me and they have their good days and they have their bad days. And, you know, it just is much easier to read that and to laugh along with you and to cry along with you, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what from your life have you explored in memoir that has been formative for you that you've, you know, exposed about yourself that has been formative that you think has made a difference?
You know, I am the daughter of divorced parents. And the divorce that my parents went through was very, very traumatic. It happened when I was about 11 years old. And all of the events after that, you know, my dad kind of left and had a new family and didn't really take much hand in his old family. And that was really hard for an 11-year-old to process through, you know. And so a lot of the things that I write about are just some of the outcroppings of that. And you know, divorce is a really hard thing for kids to get anyway. And I've come a long way toward forgiveness. My dad and I have a pretty good relationship now. I know my half sister and my half brother and all of that, and I care about them and their families. And so I try to write a lot about that sort of thing, because, you know, those things can have an impact on who you are. And it's not that I regret any of that that happened, because I feel like it's made me a stronger person, and coming through that has made me a stronger person. But there are still some things that I still carry around from that, like perfectionism and things, you know, trying to be good enough and those kinds of things. And so I write very candidly about those struggles. And I also in college had eating disorders and those sorts of things, which is, perfectionism kind of plays into that. And so I write very candidly about things like beauty, because I feel very, very strongly about that. I feel very strongly about things like emotional intelligence, because I was told as a kid, don't cry. It's only for weak people, you know, and I'm a very, very emotional person. I cry when I'm happy. I cry when I'm sad. I cry, mm-hmm. I cry when I'm laughing too hard, you know, and
yeah.
And so coming to terms with all of that. And I also write a lot about how my children have kind of just opened up a new me and made me feel more secure in who I am, because, you know, like I have an emotional kid, and I've had to come to terms with that being okay, you know, because, you know, when you're a kid and you're told that it's not okay, it's hard when you have that kid and you're the parent and you're like, that's not okay, when it really is, you know, this is who we are. And so it gives me chills, because I love writing about that kind of thing, because it has such a healing potential for the people who read, you know, because, I mean, we get so tied up in who we should be, and really who we are is good enough.
And so you think that some of the things like perfectionism and the eating disorder and things like that were an attempt to put some controls in your life where things seem to be out of control?
Oh, sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. And I, you know, mm-hmm. I have control issues too. My husband will tell you that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I can sympathize and empathize with you in terms of seeing in your children the things that you don't like within yourself.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, it's really, it's also ugly to see, to have that epiphany, like it's unconscious at first, and then you're uh-huh. like, oh, why do they keep doing yeah. that? What? Oh, wait, that looks a little bit familiar,
yes,
actually.
Exactly.
And then you're like, wow, that's a mirror. Yeah. They're a mirror. That's why I don't like it.
Yes. Ugh. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a real look. And that's maybe why memoir and writing it out can be such a healing process. And then really, that seems like what you have found in the process of writing itself.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I actually encourage my boys to do journal type things. I mean, they're still really young. The 9-year-old enjoys doing journaling, but I feel like there's such value in working those sorts of things out, you know, because we're always going to be hurt by somebody in our life. And if we're just holding all of that in, oh my gosh, that it's so damaging to us. And so writing is just one of those, for me, I always tell people, in writing, my world becomes clear. And that's basically what it is for me. You know, there's so much confusion, so many emotions that are warring with each other. And when I sit down with my notebook and I write, it all just becomes clear. You know, I get into this headspace where I'm healthier.
Mm.
So,
yeah. And I noticed on your website, too, that you offer a lot of resources and services that help other people. Maybe you can get into that. You coach, you do writing coaching and offer a lot of things. Maybe you could speak to some of that.
Yeah. I don't do a whole lot of it anymore just because I'm really focused on my own writing. But I am very passionate. I have a writer blog that's specifically geared toward writer parents who maybe don't have a whole lot of time. So I talk a lot about productivity. I talk about story structure and those kinds of things. And also writer mindset, which I feel like is a huge deal whenever you're trying to even just sit down and write, much less build a career out of it. Because there are so many, you know, like parents deal with guilt, because I know that I see it every single day when I sit down to my computer. I'm like, I should be playing with my kids instead of sitting here. And so I try to speak to a lot of that also. And so the services, I can do story coaching. I can look at query letters. I've written a ton of them in my life. And I do a lot of that. I've been an editor for a really long time through journalism. And so I offer some of that. I just got done writing a bio for a band because they just wanted an outside person to, you know, write their bio. Mm. And so I don't claim to be an expert in a lot of those things, but I do enjoy helping people out. So.
Mm. Yeah. So if somebody's stuck, you'll sometimes help people out who are struggling with something.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, I kind of, whenever I fix on something that I really love, like with the parenting, I will go as deeply as I can into it. So for me with story, I really, really love story. I read probably about 14 books a month. And some of those are writing books. Like I'm constantly learning new ways to be a good writer, you know? And so I feel like it's important for me to be constantly learning. And so when I feel like I know a lot about story. And so when other people come to me and are like, I can't figure out, you know, how to get the antagonist and the protagonist to, you know, come to some sort of agreement, I can, you know, sometimes getting an outside perspective helps with that sort of thing. My husband is kind of he's a very creative person. So he and I, when the kids are in bed, we'll sit out with whiteboards and I'll be like, I'm having a little bit of trouble with this little plot line here. We bounce ideas off each other, you know, which is really nice. I love having a creative partner in things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see a lot of, I mean, what are our lives except for episodes, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Experiences. And I see our lives as a series of short stories. And I mean, maybe I'm just a romantic in that sense or something,
but yeah.
I mean, we remember our memories sort of as episodes and
yes.
I always think of our stories are unfinished, you know, that we can add chapters and we don't have to think that our story is written. We can think of it as, okay, my story has been a little sad and melodramatic, but maybe I can add a new chapter.
Yeah, exactly.
It turns into a good part.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that, you know what, that's part of what writing as a healing process is too, is that we can look back on those chapters and see, because whenever I lost my job, we had just had our sixth son, and it was one of the most stressful times. I mean, I was every single morning, I was just like, somebody needs to help. I don't know what to do. You know, just this awful, I don't even know how to describe it. I was stressed out all the time. I was anxious all the time. I woke up with, it felt like there was just a weight on my chest every single morning. And when I go back to read those things, you know, here we are a year and a half later, or almost a year and a half later. And, you know, things are okay. They're not like super great or anything, but we're working there. We're building businesses. We're getting there. And I look back at those early days and I can remember the angst that there was there. And I'm so thankful to have moved past it, because the next time that we go through something like that, where there's so much anxiety, I can look back at that and say, you know what, we made it through that. That means we're going to make it through this too. And that's so valuable.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the gift of living a longer time, I think. As I've aged, you know, you don't have the experience when you're, say, in your early 20s, and everything seems like a terrible crisis.
Yeah.
But as you age, you're like, you know, if someone had told me in my early 20s X, Y, and Z would happen, I'd been terrified.
Yes.
But having gone through those things, I go, you know, when the next thing happens, I'm not going to be happy about it, and it's going to be really difficult. But I also know that
that's right.
Some pretty bad stuff has happened, and here I still am.
Right, exactly. You don't know what you're made of until you come out on the other side, and then you should have a record of that, you know? You should have some kind of documentation to say, wow, look what I just went through, and now we get to smooth sail for maybe a month or two, and then...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I used to be really kind of, I would live in a little bit of fear after, you know, one tragedy or something else would happen. I'd be like, oh no, another, it's fine now, but something terrible is just about to happen. And I used to be kind of fearful and anxious, right?
Yeah.
And now I think if something's, I think it's Brené Brown that said, you know, when things are good and you can have your joy sucked away by anxiety instead of just being grateful for whatever you have, you know, and to think just when you can, without having a proper amount of gratitude in the moment that you're in, you can very easily have your joy just sucked away. And so to think, there's probably around a bend soon, there's going to be something I'm not anticipating. Maybe someone will get sick or maybe there'll be some, you know, hurdle.
Yeah.
But the fact is that right now things are fine. And so I'm going to just love that. I'm going to just enjoy every second of it and suck the marrow out of the joy on that, because you don't know what's the next thing, but you're not there yet.
Yeah. And it takes so much intention to do that too, because I'm the same way. It's like when it rains, it's going to, you know, it's going to be a monsoon. Something else is coming.
Because when you go through something and you have six boys to think about, not one boy, but you have six boys to okay, logistically, how are we going to make this work out? Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And so, having six boys, and all their different personalities, you know, speaking as a, and you have no girls. You feel like you want to keep trying until you have a girl?
No, I think we're done. We're good with who we are. We might, you know, in the future, we might adopt a little girl, but right now we're pretty tapped out.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, maybe half a dozen, stop at half a dozen, but
yeah.
Seeing all their different personalities and all the different varieties of boy that is in your house. I mean, what would you say to someone who's, you know, at the beginning of motherhood and wondering, you know, how do I do this? How do I make this work? What advice do you have to someone sort of at the beginning of parenthood?
Well, you know, we started out being, we had all our own ideas about who our child would be. And the funny thing is, as they grow up, they kind of tear up all of those preconceptions that you have, you know, because our oldest son is very, very intelligent. He shares a few of the characteristics of Asperger's, but he doesn't have a diagnosis or anything. So we've worked really, really hard with him on things like emotional intelligence and just expressing himself well instead of bottling it all inside and those kinds of things. Because also with boys, they're not always taught how to handle their emotions. You know, like they get angry and they're told you shouldn't be angry, you know, but really anger is okay. Yeah. It's what you do with anger that matters. Mm-hmm. And so we've worked really hard with that. And so we grew up into that, you know, like we had our own preconceptions. They were all ripped away. So we started looking for things like how to parent in an emotionally intelligent way and a more honoring way that we felt like would help him grow up to who he was born to be instead of who we wanted him to be. And I feel like that's been a huge difference for us in the parenting world, because we have so many expectations for who we want our children to be. And the reality is they are born who they are, you know? And so, but then after we sort of found our way with that one, we had number two and he was completely different. And so it was just like, we had to completely adjust our parenting styles for each child because they were so very different, and different things would work for different kids. Our second son is one of the most emotionally intelligent children I've ever met. So he didn't need a whole lot of coaching on that kind of thing. What he needed coaching on was not to get his feelings hurt about certain things, because he felt everything, you know? And so it's just, I think the best advice I could give is just knowing who your child is, knowing their personality, some of the things that they struggle with, and trying to parent in a way that helps them become even more of who they are, you know, because they're in school, they're going to get all of these expectations put on them. And if we as parents at home can help guide them into more deeply into who they are and not who they're expected to be, then I feel like they become a more wholehearted person. And the wholehearted is a term that Brené Brown uses. I love Brené Brown. And she has she has some wonderful resources on, you know, shame and that kind of thing. And we've worked really hard on our kids to help them understand that the things that they do and the feelings that they have, those things do not make them who they are. They are born wonderful people, and sometimes they make bad decisions. Sometimes they do things that are outside of who they are, and they can always, always make it back to who they are, you know? So that's, I think that's one of the biggest things that we learned in as parents and are still learning really, because, you know, our twins are completely different people. And so we've had to kind of go back to the drawing board. Like, what in the world do we do with these two at a time? It's just, it's crazy. So
are they identical or fraternal twins?
They are identical. Yes. They're very hard to tell apart. And they, I always tell people that it seems like the single births that we had were born with half a brain. And not, that's not to say, I mean, they're all super intelligent, but the twins were born with a whole brain because they share, I mean, the things that they come up with, Lisa, I cannot even tell you. I have so many
stories
about
the shenanigans.
Like,
they share a language together in that sense?
Yes, they do. Yeah. They don't even have to talk to each other to know what each other wants. And they, ours are like Dennis the Menace times two. So they think of all of these, like, I mean, you just would, they've emptied their closet, even though it's like 15 feet up in the air.
Oh my.
It is just, it's crazy. They are our biggest challenge right now. And also super fun, but it's just, it's been a, oh my gosh, it's been fun. It's been a wild ride.
Because they're like double trouble then, because if one of them gets an idea, the other one can help out.
Oh yeah, definitely. And they don't even have to talk about it. They're just like, I know exactly what you want, and I have the missing piece.
Oh, so, and you have a lot of stories you can write about then.
Yes.
Just
yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I have plans to write a book about parenting twins one of these days. So.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Once you're done cleaning up all the messes,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. When they're maybe like five.
Well, this has been really fun, and I appreciate that you would take the time to be on the show, even though you have so many other things going on and six boys to look after. And it's been really exciting, and I hope to keep up with you with Farindale and what you're doing with that. Do you have like a release timeline for what you're doing with that?
Yes. Right now, the first season is going to be released on June 1st. So I'm kind of gearing up. I have a book launch community and all of that. We're gearing up to start promotional materials and all of that. So, yeah.
And where can people find that and find what you're up to?
My website is probably the best place. So racheltolson.com. And if they're interested in Farindale, they can just hit a /Farindale, and it's Farindale.
Okay. And yeah, there'll be show notes in case people aren't sure how to spell your name or anything like that at sparkmymuse.com. People can go to the episode for this. And this has been really fun. And I love speaking with creative people who are doing interesting things and have an interesting life. And I think six boys counts as an interesting life, no matter where you live.
Well, and, I'm very honored that you thought I had an interesting life and wanted to interview me.
Yeah, it's always fun. And I appreciate that you haven't let parenthood sideline you at all. You just continue to plow on. And that's kind of my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And when people just go straight to, there's nothing wrong with a mommy blog. I've read them. I appreciate women who do the mommy blogs, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I also like when people almost invite their children to be a part of what they're up to, and they just keep on with that too. They're both valid pursuits, and so I kind of enjoy featuring people who are up to their creative activities.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too. Please stop by and check it out.